What is up, and welcome back to another episode of the Wizards Podcast. I'm your host, Greg Finberg, and today we're going to be talking about, obviously, some game breakdowns. We got four games to talk about, so I want to talk about the highlights. I don't want to necessarily break them down, because I know a lot of you guys are probably tuned out by now. Can't blame me for that. I've been saying that all year, but I'm still watching, so hopefully I can kind of be a liaison to take you kind of through some of the main aspects of each of those games. I want to talk about some of the main takeaways, such as Denny Avdia returning to DC, Rashawn Holmes playing really well, Alex Sarr and Keyshawn George coming alive in the Wizards' latest win over Utah. I want to talk about some of that stuff. There's some other big picture stuff. I released an article last week about the Wizards increasing season ticket prices. I want to talk to you all about that. I also want to talk to you about the tank standings. Pick tracker, Memphis is sliding, so I want to give you an update on their picks. Same with the Suns. And where the Wizards obviously land in terms of retaining their pick and all that stuff. So without further ado, I want to get into at least the first thing is Rashawn Holmes. I mean, a guy that I didn't think I'd be talking about at this point in the season. Firstly, because I thought it's possible he was traded. And second, he was buried on a bench on the worst team in the league. I mean, obviously, Valanciunas was getting minutes over him. And you had Bagley at times would get some minutes when Saar or JV was out. But Holmes was really never looked at, even though he was probably the best option in terms of the bench for the bigs. But he wasn't looked at, obviously, for reasons that they wanted to shop JV. Obviously, Bagley as well. They ended up moving him for the Memphis to Memphis for that deal. So there's a lot of moving pieces there. But man, Rashawn Holmes has gotten his opportunity since the JV trade, and he's just ascended. Against Brooklyn in the win, 11 points on perfect 3-of-3 shooting, 6 boards, 4 assists, 3 blocks. And then you go to Portland, Wizards lose, but Holmes has his best game of the season, 20 points on 7-of-7 shooting, 5 boards, 2 assists. Like, he was great. And then you go over to Charlotte, 15 points, 9 rebounds on 5-of-6 from the field. So that's what, across his last 4 games, including the Orlando loss, he was shooting 20 of 21 from the field, averaging roughly 15 points per game, 7 rebounds per game. I mean, that's pretty mind-blowing to shoot that efficiently and average those numbers, especially off the bench, you know, averaging 20 to 25 minutes a game. It's pretty good, you know what I mean? So really impressive stuff from Holmes. He missed the Wizards win over Utah with a knee sprain. Hopefully it's nothing deep, because he's been playing really well, so hopefully it's nothing too serious. But shout out to Rashawn Holmes. He's on the books for $12.5 million this year. He's only got $250,000 of his $13 million of next year guaranteed. So I would pretty much assume that the Wizards decline that option. Your non guarantee is deal, whatever the generic or official move would be. But at the same time, he's really been playing well. And I don't know if you can get much for him in the offseason if you try to trade him, but maybe if you keep him and play him, you know, through next year's trade deadline, bring it back on a cheap deal. I don't see why not. But he's been really great. Just wanted to start the show by shouting him out, because I feel like he's kind of an unsung hero. Not often talked about. And so I wanted to make sure that I got that in there. Quickly moving on to Charlotte's, a 13-point win on the road too. And look, Charlotte sucks. But they still have LaMelo and Bridges and Mark Williams and Josh Green. Like, they aren't good at all, but they still pretty much have their best roster they can put together on the floor. Whereas Washington obviously has been without Malcolm Brogdon, who's been listed with an ankle injury. It just seems like, why would, number one, the Wizards bring him back at all? Because he's an injury-prone player. This is like the third or fourth time, maybe even fifth different injury he's had. It's like the first 10 games of the season with that finger injury. He's had foot injuries, ankle injuries. I think he had some sort of hand injury. Like, he's always injured. This is nothing new. It's always been a theme with Brogdon. But I just don't think the Wizards are going to bring him back in terms of the tank. And also, just like, he's a veteran on this team. You don't even want him to be playing and taking up minutes from the young guys. So why bring him back at all? So I wouldn't be surprised if Keith said that you expect to see Brogdon before the end of the year. I don't see it. I think he's probably out for the year. Really no point in even bringing him back. I don't know how extensive the injury is, but it doesn't really matter to me. So he was out. Obviously, Sadiq Bey. I want to talk about this for a second. The amount of comments I get, and I'm not saying you're wrong for this, about Sadiq Bey. Greg, is Sadiq Bey going to play? Greg, what's Sadiq Bey's timeline or status or update? I don't know. I feel bad that I don't have an answer, but I just don't know. The Wizards have been really bad this year and honestly last year in terms of telling the general public where players are at with injuries. And I don't know if the media is asking it, and maybe the Wizards are just being vague, not answering, or they're answering, the media is kind of gatekeeping it for themselves and not really releasing it to the public, which they should do. It gets to a point where you're kind of like, just, you know, why don't the Wizards just give an update on him? Why doesn't Brian Keith just say, yeah, he's progressing really well? I think it's because they know, and they knew all along, he was never going to play this season. I mean, twofold, you want guys to have as much time as possible to recover from an ACL tear. It's coming up pretty much a year to the day, I think, that that Bay tore his ACL with Atlanta. You don't want to rush anyone back from that. That's number one. Number two, it's the same thing with Brogdon. Sadiq Bey is a quality player, and I don't know if he's going to be the same quality right away after the injury, but why bring him back? You are trying to lose games without trying to lose games, really. You're trying to put decent products out there to make it seem like you're not trying to lose when you're actually trying to lose. So why would you bring him back? It's twofold. For, you know, don't want to rush him back, but you also don't want another great player entering into the equation. Shake up minutes from some of the young guys right now, but also could help you win some games, which you don't want to do. Same with Brogdon. So again, I wouldn't be surprised if we didn't see either of them, Bay or Brogdon, the rest of the season. But that's just to address the questions that I've been getting a lot. I don't know. I wish I did. I wish the team was more transparent, but they're not. So you just kind of got to, you know, play with the cards you're dealt. And based on those cards, I don't see any reason or any scenario that the Wizards or Bay would prefer he returns this year. Moving on, obviously, Jordan Poole was out. He's been out with a left elbow or right elbow hyperextension. I guess it happened against Brooklyn, because he missed the Portland game, and then he missed the Charlotte game, and then he missed the ensuing home game against the Jazz. Also one more game in there, unless the Portland game was before. Let me look. At Miami too. So he missed, he played Portland, then he's missed the last three games for the Wizards. I don't know how long the timeline is for hyperextended elbows, but he's been out the last three games. Honestly, the Wizards are 2-1, and it's not, I'll preface that, they beat the Hornets and they beat the Jazz, the little two other worst teams in the league. So it's not like, oh, the Wizards are better without Jordan Poole. Their offense has been worse, obviously, without Jordan Poole. They're figuring it out a little bit, and they did against Utah. Their offense is great, but everyone does against Utah. I think it's cool to see when Poole goes out, other guys are kind of like, it's kind of like dying by fire or dying by combat. Like, Bob Carrington turns the ball over, you know, decent bit. Same with George, same with Sarr. But, like, it's like you're throwing them into the fire, and they're going to fail sometimes. But at the same time, they're going to come out of it stronger and looking better for it. And I think that's what's been happening. I mean, you look at Bob Carrington in that first game without Poole against Charlotte. 11 points, 5 rebounds, 4 assists, 0 turnovers, and a plus 11. That's great. Keyshawn George had, 8 points. Sarr had 10 points. But the Wiz had, Middleton and Koulibaly lead them with 17, and they were great. Or at least I was happy that Bilal shot the ball. 6 of 18 from the field. Not great, 33%, pretty bad. But 18 shots is something to take away. 3 of 11 from 3. Again, pretty terrible numbers. But the 11 is what I'm looking at. And you might think that's sad for a player in year 2, but I also understand Bilal. And I know that it's going to take so much longer than people think for him to actually figure out the shot and figure out his game and really ascend. A lot of people want that to happen right now because they're getting impatient with the rebuild and they're bored and tired of losing. But Bilal was always a project player, and he's gotten so much better in every other category, and his defense has always been great. It's just a matter of his shot, because he can create. We saw that his numbers have gone up this year. He had a triple-double a month ago, but teams don't respect his three. They literally sag off him and just say, please shoot it. If you make it, fine. If that opens up for him, then guys have to come out to him, and he's got a really quick first step. He can blow by guys, but you can't do that when the guy's got a 5-10 foot head start in the paint because he doesn't respect your jumper. So that's the main thing for Bilal. And I like that he's at least shooting, because you see games where he shoots like once in the first half and like four in the second half. Or the thing that infuriates me the most is he'll shoot like 7 or 8 times in the first half, make like 3 or 4, have like 12, 13 points, and then doesn't shoot until like the last minute of the fourth quarter. He's got to maintain that aggression throughout the game. And the Charlotte game was that. You know, 17 points, shot very bad. But I like that he shot the ball at least. Efficient game, 5 of 9 for Middleton. He's been pretty good the last couple of games as he gotten acclimated. But the real kicker here is the bench. The Wizards bench outscored Charlotte's bench 50-13. I mean, they dominated. It was led by Holmes, 15 points, 9 boards. He was phenomenal, 5 of 6 from the field. Corey Kispert, I mean, it's pretty quietly just had a really solid season. 5 of 8 from the field, 3 of 6 from three, 13 points. He was a team high plus 17, which is phenomenal. Doing it on both ends, 10 points for Champagne, 12 for Smart. So that's 4 players on the bench in double figures, 8 total, including the 4 starters in double figures. I mean, it's a really good team effort, and the defense was great. I mean, Charlotte is a really bad defensive team, but they're a really good offensive team at times, and it's hard to guard LaMelo and the pick and roll with Mark Williams and all that. Bridges had a really good first quarter, but they held Charlotte to 100 points. That's after holding Brooklyn to 98 points. Like, this defense is kind of finding its way. You know, this team is kind of finding its way. It's the Hornets. I get it. The Wizards have, 12 wins on the season. And I think now with beating Utah, they've all come against 5 teams. So, obviously, you got 3 wins against Brooklyn. You got 4 against Charlotte. You beat Denver. Now you got a win against Utah. So, that being said, it's the first time the Wizards have swept an opponent since before the rebuild, since the 22-23 season, I believe, which is pretty nice for this team. Obviously, had Charlotte's number after all this year. Charlotte had its number. It could come back to bite it because, obviously, you basically gained 4 wins while Charlotte gained 4 losses. You want them to continue to, like, separate themselves, and you it's still a 3-game advantage, and we'll go over the tank standings later. But nonetheless, it was a really good effort for Washington against against the Hornets. Denny's return, also, I'll go back to the Portland game because that was before that. I won't harp on this for a bit, but I tweeted out, and I got a lot of backlash for it, and I think a lot of people just hate Denny. I don't know why. I don't know what he did in D.C. I thought he was pretty good. I thought he was a pretty good player on and off the court. He didn't get a tribute video, and I guess I made the mistake of forgetting that it's a new regime. Because Kuzma didn't get a hype video either. And that's after all those years with Tommy Shepard and that whole front office where, like, Raul Neto would get a tribute video and Ish Smith would get a tribute video. Basically, if you spent any amount of time in a Wizards uniform, you know, Ancest Pass Sneaks, you're a real one. If you know who that is, probably would have gotten a tribute video because he spent, like, 2 years here? And that was just the theme. And I guess now it's different. This front office is kind of like, no, unless you're like a Brad Beal or a John Wall, we're not doing anything for you. You need to really make an impact here. Which I like that. I respect it. I always thought it was dumb when teams overdid the hype videos. But I tweeted out because, like, the Wizards, and this is parlaying into my next part. The Wizards social media team did nothing really for Denny. Like, at least from what I saw, there was no, like, you know, thank you, Denny, or Denny returns. I think they maybe posted a picture of him after the game, like, laughing with his teammates and stuff. But I didn't see anything like that. There really wasn't much on the broadcast either, which is probably from the top down. Look, we're not going to harp on Denny too much. You can talk about the storyline, but we're not going to make this big deal of him returning. And it didn't, you know, he got hurt pretty quickly, missed the rest of the game. I get it. But I was just kind of like, what? Did they not do anything? And obviously I got a pretty bad response. Like, why would they give him a tribute video? I'm not saying to give him a tribute video because he's the best player in the world, but he was the Wizards' best player last year. Drafted first round, top 10 by the team, 4 years in D.C. Well-liked guy in the community. I thought they'd do something, like a little, like, hey, like, put a little graphic up on the Jumbotron. Like, thank you, Denny. Give him his flowers, but they didn't. And that's fine. Now we know. But that parlays it into the Wizards, and I don't really know how I can how I can say, I've said this multiple times this year. I don't know how I can say this next thing without coming off as disrespectful. And I don't want to be disrespectful to like the individuals. Like, I'm not trying to like get anyone fired, or I'm not trying to put anyone individually on blast. But the Wizards social media team has got to be bottom five in the league, if not bottom three, if not bottom one. I just like, I know that teams, I've talked to like people who run these accounts, and like in my class here at Penn State, we have people that come in and their literal job is to get hired to help grow these team social media teams. The social media is huge, and they know that it's becoming a really important thing, and they're hiring people for these roles. And I don't know if the Wizards have someone in that role specifically. There's no way they do, because looking at like a team like Detroit, like the Pistons, and their social media admin on Twitter just goes ham. They have all these pre-made graphics and posts, and they're really promoting the team in a fun, you know, way, engaging way that their fans really like. They know the current, you know, memes and the stuff that's like popular, and they post that stuff with like their win posts and graphics and their tweets in terms of like their captions on their highlights and all that stuff. The Wizards literally post like their game day article or like their game day post, and it's like, it's a cool graphic. Whoever does it kind of cooks, but they post that, and then they'll post like a where to watch and all that stuff. They'll post some pregame fit pictures, and then it's end of the first quarter, end of the second quarter, end of the third quarter, and final score graphics, right? But those are posted like, I'll usually do, if you follow me, I'll do my like end one, you know, Wizards 35, Utah 32, and I put some analysis there as well, some players that are playing well. And that gets sent out as the quarter ends. Like, I typed that out with like 2 minutes left, because I know like, this is what I want to say. This is how I want to keep, you know, everyone that follows me informed on, here's the score, here's a couple takeaways. Okay, you don't have to keep watching, you can move on. The Wizards literally have the graphic made. It just go into whatever you do, Photoshop, Canva, and write in the score on each team. Like, it's really not that difficult. Yet that gets posted. Sometimes it'll get posted like as the second quarter begins, they're posting it. It's at least like 3 to 4 minutes sometimes after the quarter ends. And you just got to think to yourself, there's no way that they are paying someone a full-time salary to do this, and they are this incompetent at it. I refuse to believe that. Unless they're getting told, don't post it until later, so that it gets like, it's a, like irrelevant now, and it's already the second quarter, so nobody cares. Sweep it under the rug. This is a propaganda machine, as you all know. But there's no way that's the case. The final score sometimes gets posted late. Halftime, honestly, has been posted really late a lot of times. And other than that, maybe they'll post a couple highlight videos, but it's the same captions that they recycle the entire time. There's nothing clever about it. There's no like, no pop culture references. It's just like Alex Saar in all caps, or big dunk from Bilal. And it's the same emoji. It's just bad. It doesn't, and you see the engagement on it, and people have commented on it. Like, the engagement sucks because they either don't know how to get engagement or don't care. And I understand the team's terrible, so no one really gives, you know, gives anything about it. No one cares. But you can still get engagement even if your team is bad. The Detroit Pistons got hella engagement last year, partly because they were historically bad, but because they kind of capitalized on it. They knew the times. They knew the trends. They knew what would get the clicks. That's kind of the name of the game. And sorry if this is a ramble, but the Wizards social media team has just kind of given up, which sucks to see, because a good social media admin can kind of get fans rejuvenated, or at least energized, especially in low points of the year. And I feel like the Wizards have really dropped the ball there with when it comes to social media. So that was just something that I took away, and I'm sure I know a lot of you have as well, because you've commented under my post, and I've been, you know, refraining from commenting too much on it, but that just kind of, the Denny stuff kind of brought it to light that I wanted to talk about it. Also, what I didn't talk about a couple weeks ago is my article on season ticket prices for the Wizards. Obviously, I haven't read it. Go over to Bolts Forever. It's not too long. It's maybe like a 600 to 700 word read. I don't like doing articles that are way too long, because I know I don't like reading really long articles. But the gist of it is that the Washington Wizards are increasing season ticket prices for the 2025-26 season. One season ticket holder told me that their tickets went up 56% for next year. And obviously that's egregious. Any type of raise in season ticket prices that's above like 2% for this team is wildly obnoxious. And it's honestly disrespectful to the fans that support this team. It's apparently a 7% increase realistically across the board for most season ticket holders. Some have seen lower, obviously some have seen higher, but an average of 7. But they're introducing this new like premium tier seating for next year. And that's premium tier seating on top of the Hennessy Lofts and the Michelob Ultra courtside lounge that they have under each basket. I think the premium seating is one of the dumbest features you can have. Yes, they're in it to make money ultimately, and the more high rollers you bring in, the better for profit, and that's the business aspect. But like, just look how dead Capital One Arena is. I mean, under one basket, you've taken out a bunch of seats so that you can have high top tables for wealthy business people to discuss stuff over or mingle and drink, and it's just like, have seats there. You literally just have a bunch of fans that are there that are checked out for the most part of the game and don't care. They don't contribute to the atmosphere whatsoever. And then on the other side, the Hennessy Lofts, it's these big booths. And it's really, that's where like the main celebrities that they're hosting at the games are, or the high rollers or whatever. And again, it's spaced out seating. You can have so many more seats there, so many more fans, yet you have these high roller spaced out seats. And I'm sure most of the time those fans aren't really going for the game. They're going for the atmosphere, just talk and mingle and maybe do business. I don't know. But that just takes away from it. And I think it's stupid. And I know why they're doing it, to make more money. But if that were me, I would just put regular seats there. I'd get actual fans that care about the team and care about the game, other than people who just want to go there as a business expense or to talk business or whatever they want to do for the experience. And now they're adding in more premium seating. They've uprooted a big section where, you know, season ticket holders had old seats for years. And they basically, from what I was told, said, hey, we're moving you out. It's way more expensive. One source told me it was $14,000 for this year for his two seats, and now it's $24,000, and his company's going to drop them because they can't afford it. And basically he said the Wizards were like, tough, we're going to get someone else in here that can afford it. And the guy was like, hey, can you give me something else, please? And they were just like, find it. We're not going to help you, which is obviously pretty shitty thing to do. Sorry for my language, but it is. It's a shitty thing to do. So obviously on face value, 56% is disgusting, and they're the worst team in the league. And it's just like, this was swept completely under the rug. How no one who covers the team, like, not like got this scoop. I'm not trying to put myself on a pedestal, but like, how no one reported on it. It's pretty obvious to see. This is really bad press for the Wizards. The backlash that I got for the article, not me personally, but the fans had for the Wizards, was basically like, you can't be serious with this. And they decided, you know, we're not going to really promote it on our socials or anything because we get flack for it, but we'll send stuff out to season ticket holders and kind of do it, you know, quietly, increase it by that much. I feel like it's important for the media to hold them in check. I didn't write this article so that people would get mad at the Wizards. I wrote it because I thought it was important for fans to know this is what the team's doing. Whether you like it or you don't, whether you rationalize with it or don't, it's news. And it's something that needs to be reported on. And if you go in there, I reached out to the Wizards. We talked, and I got a statement from them. The statement basically didn't really fight back on people getting mad. They were just kind of, oh, here's our great seating. It's first-class experience. You should come out. Like, they really weren't, like, sorry. They were basically like, yeah, this is what we're doing. It's great. You should try it. Which, obviously, most fans can't afford, so I don't really get the statement. But they gave me the statement nonetheless. Face value looks terrible. It's a really bad PR look. Your team's terrible, and you're raising ticket prices kind of under your fans' nose. Not great. Not great at all. But nonetheless, if you want the full article, obviously go to Bolts Forever. I think I did a pretty good job, biasly. But yeah, make sure to go check that out because I think it's important for fans to know. Talked about the win over Charlotte. Obviously, Portland. Holmes was great, but Portland's on a roll. Just kind of beat the Wizards for the most part. Shout out to them. The Miami loss, I don't want to talk about it too much because it was just a boring game. Miami had 9 available players. Wiggins was out. Like, some of their good players were out too. But it didn't really matter. Like, the Wizards just, like, sucked. They had no energy. The games in Miami are dead anyway because they have no fans. No real fans, at least. But Miami just kind of killed the Wizards. They were up by, like, 20 plus at one point. Just a really bad loss, and like a good loss for the tank, but like in terms of actually trying and playing well. Really bad loss. So I don't want to talk about it too much. Nothing was really positive to gleam out of it. But a positive was the next night. Utah 125-122 Washington win. George led the way with 23, Sarr 21, Champagne 17 off the bench. But it was the rookies that highlighted this effort. Keyshawn George, 23.7 boards, one block, 8 of 17 from the field. He was so good on both ends. He played a lot of point guard, and he ran the offense. He found open guys. He facilitated. He's really, you could tell, just he's getting so comfortable. In the beginning of the year, he was relegated to the corner and didn't do anything. And he's a spot-up shooter. And now he's facilitating and running the offense alongside Bub. He just looks – he looks miles better, and that's so good for his development that this early, 60 games in, you're already seeing that ascension. Alex Sarr, 21 points, 5 boards, 4 assists, 2 blocks. 16 in the first half, really didn't do much in the second half. But nonetheless, it's a really solid effort. They keyed in on him, obviously, in the second half and made other guys beat him. George and Bub did. But Alex Sarr looked poised. He made – a pair of threes in the first half. He looked great on both ends as well. He needs to stop jumping when they pump fake. The amount of times that Alex Sarr gets up in the air and then fouls on the way down is infuriating. You are 7'1". You have a huge wingspan. Just use it. Go straight up or don't bite on the pump fake. That's one thing that I didn't like. Other than that, he was great. And then you got Bub Carrington coming in there. He is quietly just going to be a stat sheet stuffer. He's not going to score 25 a game. I don't think he will. But I think he's always going to be like a 17-7 or 17-6-7 guy. Because he's a good rebounder too. 12 points, 9 assists, so nearly a double-double for Bub. 5 rebounds, 2 blocks, 3 steals. I mean, 5 stocks is unbelievable in any night, but you don't even care about it because he had 9 assists. He had 12 points. He had a clutch free throw. 5 boards too. He ran the offense. He played point guard. And that's something I've been saying the entire year. Bub is a point guard. Him on ball is so much better than him off ball. And obviously, he gets dicey with Poole. I get it. A lot of Poole stands want Poole to be here. Ideally, Poole is here. I like Jordan Poole, both as a player and as a person. Like, I think he's great for this team. But I don't think Wizards fans should get attached. And I've been saying that the entire time. Nobody other than Bilal this entire time, and obviously the three rookies now, has been safe. So, fans were mad that they traded Denny. Fans might be mad if they do decide to move on from Poole at some point. But nonetheless, I want to make it positive. The rookies were phenomenal. They carried the entire way. Middleton was pretty solid all night as well. But a really good effort for Washington. Champagne, 17 points, and I haven't talked about it on the pod, but just signed that 4-year, $10 million deal. So well deserved. It's so nice to see guys, work their way through. And I think Champagne was undrafted, undrafted through the G League, and worked their way up to a standard NBA contract. It's been a long time coming. Thought it would happen after the deadline. It didn't, but converted nonetheless from a two way to a standard deal. I think it's like 4 years, $10 million. He's getting paid $1.8 million for the rest of this season, and I think the final 3 years are non guaranteed. We saw a similar deal with Vucevic last year where it was a 2-year deal. He got paid basically through the end of the year, and then they waived him and re-signed him to another 2-way deal. This could be a way of rewarding Champagne. It's also a way of, like, it's still a great deal if they're like, you know what, we fear if we waive him, someone else will pick him up. Let's just keep him on this cheap deal for the time being, and even if he's not great this year, the final 2 years are still not guaranteed. So it's just such a good team-friendly deal, but at the same time, reward Champagne for his hard work and his production. He's been, a top 5 player on the Wizards in terms of consistency for the latter part of the last month or so. And it's nice to see someone like that get rewarded. You saw it with Jordan Goodwin. And obviously, that's worked out. He's playing really well in LA right now. Jalen Noel has been great. He got a 10-day at some point. So it's always cool to see players like this get rewarded. Garrison Matthews, obviously, a while ago. But the rookies obviously carried. And like I said, this is a win that hurts Washington's tank. But who cares? Like, they have 12 wins now. Charlotte's got 14. It's like a 2-game lead. I get it. But, Charlotte's not going to lose out. I at least don't think so for the rest of the season. And I think the Wizards, aren't going to set the world on fire either. Maybe they'll win 3 games. Maybe. So That was cool to see. Really good team effort. Close game at the end. Rookies had to fight and dig deep because they tried to kind of blow it. It's been a theme for the Wiz. But nonetheless, they pulled it out. So really cool for the Wiz there. I don't want to go too long here. I want to keep it around 30, 35 minutes. So I want to make sure I get to the standings to go to the updated tank standings real quick. Let me pull that up. Washington obviously sits firmly in last at 12 and 49. They have a full two-game lead on Charlotte, who's 14 and 47. They've lost eight in a row. Utah, 15 and 47. Washington plays them again down the line. They are 2.5 games back. And then you got a 4.5 game lead for the Wiz over the Pelicans, and then, like, you know, a 7.5 game lead over Toronto. So the Pelicans have kind of won, you know, pulled away. And like I said, it's Utah, Charlotte, and Washington. The Wizards basically are going to have that 14% chance at one and a Cooper flag. But they should be in a really good position to not fall outside the top five based on obviously where they finish. And so that's kind of the tank outlook. The Wizards are it's getting close, but at the same time, they're not going to set the world on fire the second half of the season. Looking ahead for the Wizards, it's a 7-game road trip. So if you wanted them to lose more games, this is pretty ideal. It's two at Toronto, two at Detroit. They'll probably lose both at Detroit and I would assume both at Toronto. Toronto's not great record-wise, but they're playing better basketball. They're healthy. At Denver, at Portland, those are humongous losses. And then at Utah to close it out, barely beat them at home, and Utah was resting. Utah is legitimately just in their face tanking. And the Wizards are tanking, but, like, they've been playing the same guys for the most part all year. When Poole comes back, if he does, they'll start Jordan Poole. Like, Toronto is legitimately just not playing Lauri Markkanen and saying he has a back injury. I'm doing air quotes right now. I'm not going to tell you that he's not injured because I don't know, but I'm going to tell you I wouldn't be surprised if he wasn't. Jordan Clarkson's out. Like, all of their actual good players just don't play anymore. You haven't even heard about them because they're such a small market team. They just kind of slip under the rug and get away with it. But Danny Ainge is legitimately in the NBA's face saying, I'm not playing my best players. I'm making up or doing whatever injury thing. You can't tell me that they're not injured, and I'm just going to play all these randoms. Legitimately, they threw like a G League lineup last night, plus like KJ Martin, who's kind of decent, but he was probably their worst player. Collier was great, but they're tanking pretty openly. And so for all the Adam Silvers, we're going to be anti-tanking league. You just got all these small market teams that have to literally blatantly tank in order to get a good player, in order to turn it around and actually be a good team at some point. That's the league that he's created. You know, the Wizards and the Jazz can't just say, bang, come to LA and play with Luka or play with LeBron because they came here or Luka was traded here. But, like, it's not that easy. And so this is how they have to do it. I'm not blaming Utah. This is how they have to tank. They have to do it. But, yeah, 7-game road trip. I think the Wizards are at least going to lose 5. I would be surprised if they didn't lose 6. But a pretty tough road ahead for them. And then the last thing I want to end on is the pick tracker, because I've had some people saying, you know, asking me where certain teams lie. Obviously, the Wizards have – I've planned it out, and this is going to be pretty complex here. It took me a while. I'm really bad at math. Basically, the Wizards have their own pick, top 10 protected. They retain it this year if they have a bottom 6 record. They are currently – the current 7 worst team is Brooklyn and Philly. They have, like, 21 wins. That's 9 more than the Wiz. Obviously, the Wizards are going to get that. It's just a matter of when. And so that pick won't convey. It goes over to a top 8 protected pick the following year. And then you got the Memphis pick, which is a top 14 protected 2025 first rounder. Basically, Memphis makes the playoffs. That pick conveys to Washington. So what Washington wants is that pick to convey. They want Memphis to make the playoffs, but as pretty much the worst record in the playoffs. That's not going to happen, but they want Memphis to continue to lose because they can be bad in the second half and they're still pretty much going to make the playoffs. They're, you know, decently better than most of the teams out west that are fighting for the play-ins. So if you're Washington, you know, Memphis has lost 4 straight. All 4 at home, 3 basically at the buzzer, and then they just got killed by OKC. So they're kind of sliding. They're 38 and 24. They're nowhere near that bubble line. But as of right now, that current pick is what, 24, which is great. That's where the Wiz got Keyshawn George last year. So that's obviously ideal. The more they lose, the more the teams around them, like the Lakers, Houston might pass them. Like, you want those teams like Denver to win a lot more games, and while Memphis kind of struggles, not too much to where they fall out, because I don't think that'll happen, but you want them to continue to lose. So you're kind of hate watching there if you're the Wizards. And then in terms of Phoenix, they got a nice comeback win the other night, but that pick's currently 43 in the second round. That's the 13th pick, right, in the second round for Washington. The better that is for them, the better. Or the worse in Houston, or obviously, I can't speak. The worse they are, the better for Washington. And then it's tough to kind of dictate how the picks are going to lay out with like Washington and Detroit and all that. With Golden State, there's a lot of protections there, and I'm really confused still. I know the Wizards don't have their own pick; it goes to Boston, I believe. But right now the Wizards have Golden State's pick in the second round, and they have Detroit's pick this year in the second round. Detroit's pick's protected 56-60. That's going to not happen. They're not going to be a top five team in the league, I don't think, by the end of the year. So it's possible the Wizards have three total second round picks, I think. Could be wrong, but I think. It's also possible that that is the best of those three. Nonetheless, it's difficult to understand, but kind of Memphis losing a lot has helped the Wizards. The Suns obviously being a terrible team and likely missing the playoffs helps the Wizards immensely. And so that's kind of an update there. That's going to do it for this episode. Just wanted to give you guys an update on where the Wizards lie before the 7-game road trip. They're kind of sitting pretty, but not as pretty as they used to in the tank standings. But obviously coming off a really good game, probably the best game the rookie trio has played together. The three best players pretty much for the Wizards on the court all game. Played 30-plus minutes and kind of led them to a win. They're growing up. They're developing, and you just kind of see it in their own way. I mean, Keyshawn's catch-and-shoot game has been really great, but he's starting to facilitate. He's starting to be the go-to guy on defense, taking away the best wing player on the opposing team. That's great to see. Alex Saar getting more comfortable stepping out and shooting a three, but also protecting the rim and developing a semi-inside game. He's got to stop being soft around the rim. He needs to go up strong instead of fading away on these layups and on these, you know, hook shots or floaters. He needs to go up strong and draw contact because you barely see him shoot free throws for a guy that's 7-1. But other than that, he's really developing. You see him being more comfortable in the post, so that's nice to see. And then you got a guy like Bub who's stuffing the stat sheet. His court vision has been unbelievable. Got to limit some of the turnovers at times, costly turnovers at that, unforced sometimes. But the rebounding is there for, 6'5" guard. The defense is there, three steals, two blocks. Like, he's doing it all on both ends. And he ran the offense against Utah to score 125, closed the game out as the lead guard. That's the development you want to see from these young guys. What people ask me, why would I watch this team? What are the Wizards playing for? That development, games like the Utah game where you see a true ascension, true development, a true breakthrough for this rookie class. That's what you're watching for. And so that was cool to see. You know, despite losing to a team close to them in the tank standings, you know, the Wizards earned a hard-fought win, and it was because the three guys that they drafted last June were the best players on the court. That's pretty crazy to say. So I've always been a guy that likes when rookies play right away. It was really rough in the beginning for them, but you're seeing they're so much more comfortable now for it. They're going to be better off for it down the line. And I'm excited to see the rest of the season. What, 20 games left? It's just going to be all rookies, all young guys. And that's always cool. That's exciting. And that'll get fans to hopefully, you know, be a little bit intrigued by the product this team's putting on the floor. And kind of by at least the tank race. It's going to be close between these three teams. They're all trying to lose so much that it'll be interesting to see who gets the worst record in the league. But that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you all for listening. I'll be back probably next week at some point doing another breakdown of this caliber. And hopefully the rookies are still playing the right way, still playing well, still leading the pack. Maybe not to wins, but maybe to hard-fought losses. Can we compromise on that? Rookies play well, the Wizards still lose. That's ideal. But nonetheless, thank you guys always for tuning in. I appreciate all the support. But that's going to do it for this episode. Go Wiz.